And welcome to the program. You are listening to People Rise Up on your non-commercial community radio station, KBOO, here in Portland, Oregon, USA, and online at kboo.fm. I'm your host, Andrew Geller, and we are going to tackle something today that I've come back and forth to over time, and that's surveillance. Specifically, government surveillance, and somewhat more specifically, the distinction between legal and illegal government surveillance, as well as the private businesses which facilitate the government surveillance in the first place. My guests today are Lily Coney. She is the Associate Director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center back in Washington, D.C. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And I also have on the line here John Young. He is the administrator of the online archive, cryptome.org. And welcome to you, John.
Hi, good to be here.
I am going to start out here, John, having a little bit of a conversation with Lily and use that as a segue into talking about how government surveillance is done through private phone and internet companies, which I know you're most interested in discussing. So bear with us for a few minutes here and we'll come back to you.
Sounds good.
It was about 2.5 or so weeks back that George W. Bush began to defend a story that appeared in, or began to defend actions he took that were revealed in a New York Times story a year after they should have been, in my opinion, regarding National Security Agency spying on U.S. citizens. Reports came out just yesterday that, in fact, the National Security Agency began the domestic spying program even before it received orders from George W. Bush. The United Press International Wire Service is distributing that news this morning for people who would like to check. Lily, why don't we just start out here with us hearing your assessment of what the big story is here? Is it that the National Security Agency is spying domestically? Is it the person occupying the office of the presidency overreaching in his authority? How do you view this?
There are a couple of things that are interesting about this current situation. One, the actions of the executive branch in assuming more authority than it is given, that it assumed that it can go to a few members of Congress, tell them what they were doing. These Congresspersons were limited in their ability to communicate with others, and then taking action independent of what laws were already in place, and far exceeding their role as in the executive in disregarding laws like the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the Privacy Act, other federal laws that are intended to control the actions of the executive and bring it under the purview of the judicial branch of government. The second issue is their how they're reacting to the fact that this information has been disclosed. It's as if you they're sitting playing a game of poker and they're going to try to bluff their way through this very damaging situation by pretending as if they had some cover of law or some legitimate purpose for conducting themselves in the way they have, when in fact the laws that are on the books would have allowed them to do these actions with the judicial oversight that is necessary and do it legally. But in fact, they have acted illegally and gone outside of the restrictions that are imposed by these laws. And doing so under the cover of an executive order, which is in fact saying that they could just strike the laws from the books or ignore the Constitution by the president affixing his signature to an executive order. The other issue is the role of Congress to provide oversight, in that they're supposed to make sure that the executive does in fact conduct itself within the bounds of the Constitution, within the bounds of the laws that it has approved that have been signed and become law. And the role of the judiciary has been usurped completely by a conversation between the administration and key members of the executive, the legislative branch, who are members of the intelligence committees or the leadership of the House or the Senate, which is not really true oversight by the legislative branch.
Now, I want to repeat something that you referenced about two-thirds of the way into your response there, and that's that what the National Security Agency is doing could have been achieved, and ethics and morals about spying on domestic citizens aside, there was a legal process through the Foreign Intelligence Service Act and the court it set up to achieve these types of surveillance practices.
Exactly. Now, what they contend is that it wasn't flexible enough and they needed to act quickly, but there is, in fact, Title 50, Chapter 36, Subchapter I, Section 1805, the issuance of orders, under what is the F of that chapter, emergency orders. The Attorney General, if he deems it an emergency and that they need to gather information quickly, can independently request that information be gathered. And within 72 hours of making that determination, go to one of the select judges on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court and say this is what the situation was and we had to move quickly, and get that approved, although it was done prior to getting that approval from one of the 11 judges. This is in the law. This power to do this is already codified in the law. To ignore that and to tell the American public that somehow they couldn't have achieved what they wanted to achieve without doing it illegally is completely false. It's untrue. And the law itself, and if they're saying over at the executive that they don't know what the law says, if the Attorney General doesn't know what this law says, then there's something really wrong with what's going on in this administration.
It's come out that in 2004, in one of the attempted reauthorizations of the program, which George W. Bush said he did at least 30 times every 45 days. Now, I did a little bit of quick math. That amount of time works out to a minimum of 3 years, 8.5 months exactly. If you go back in time from mid-December, you arrive at March of 2002 when this program began. Now, that does square up with a lot of what has been said regarding this, but as I referenced at the top of the show, the UPI wire reports this morning that newly declassified documents show the U.S. National Security Agency expanded its domestic anti-terror wiretapping before President George Bush ordered it. Now, the reason, and I'm going to do a little circuitous thing here, the justification that the system wasn't flexible enough, which is one of those great myths that's being spread far and wide now, really stems back to the fallout from the mid-70s Church Committee hearings, Senate Select Subcommittee regarding intelligence activities in the United States, headed by then-Senator from Idaho, Frank Church. The entire reports are posted on the People Rise Up website, and I've got a little bit of text here from these reports with information that dates back to the late 1930s. And the 1940s regarding illegal domestic spying by other agencies. The National Security Agency didn't exist until after World War II. But some of the major problems, as cited in the Church Committee report, are really interesting in light of these current events. The headline, the kind of title sections, the titles of these sections include the number of people affected by domestic intelligence activity. The amount of information collected is held for too long, ignoring the law. Deficiencies in accountability and control. Intrusive techniques, questionable authorization. Using covert action to disrupt and discredit domestic groups. Inadequate controls on dissemination and retention. And it just kind of goes on from there. And as we learned a few days ago, the National Security Agency not only has been doing this spying, but they've been distributing the information that they found. And again, you know, it's kind of a semantic argument of who ordered what when, and is this a legal thing? The administration has shown more than once that it is willing to distort facts, not reveal facts, and just outright lie, even using legal arguments or so-called legal arguments as justification for activities that they know they wouldn't be able to do had they not twisted information around. And John Ashcroft refused to reauthorize this program in 2004. I'm sorry. The person substituting for John Ashcroft as attorney general when he was in the hospital for gallbladder surgery refused to reauthorize the program. Alberto Gonzalez and Andrew Card went to see Ashcroft in the hospital to try and get him to reauthorize it. And at that point, he too did say, I'm not so sure about this.
Well, you're right, Andrew. This is, you know, deja vu, okay? We know that the New York Times in December of 1974 published an article about covert operations by the CIA, which included a discussion on efforts of the intelligence agencies to collect information on the political activities of U.S. citizens. During the same period that the revelation of the current scandal regarding the application of surveillance resources domestically also included a report that the Department of Defense had been collecting information on anti-war groups. If you recall, in the 70s, there were anti-war groups, there were civil rights groups, there were groups exercising their First Amendment rights, legally exercising their First Amendment rights, who found themselves under the surveillance of foreign intelligence agencies in the United States. Now, the point being, the whole reason for the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act was to curb and control the activities of these organizations employing their surveillance technology within the U.S. border. And just to pretend as if this situation hadn't happened before, during the same situation, select members of the House and Senate were informed of what activities were being engaged in prior to the 1974 disclosure in the New York Times. They found that was insufficient, that Congress was not engaged in its proper oversight authority over what these agencies were doing. They passed the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act to clearly communicate to these agencies, you are not supposed to be engaged in domestic spying. And if you are, you have to be doing it under some kind of judicial oversight. These agencies engaging in this type of activity, and if it is true that they were engaged in this activity prior to any executive authority of any kind of oversight by any of the elected or appointed branches of government, then there's something seriously wrong with how these agencies are functioning.
You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO. My guests today are Lily Coney, Associate Director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, and you've been hearing her speak, and we're going to bring John Young from Cryptome.org up into the mix here. You can find out more about each of those organizations online, www.epic.org and www.cryptome.org, Cryptome. And the People Rise Up website at kboo.fm has links to those groups and all sorts of other information related to the issue we're talking about today, which is domestic, legal, and illegal spying. I'm going to bring John back up here, and you wanted to talk primarily about how the NSA spying is facilitated through private telephone and now internet service providers. Can you tell us a little bit about the relationship between these private businesses and government spy agencies, NSA in particular?
Yes, it's important to keep in mind that that no intelligence anywhere in the world can take place without the involvement of private businesses. In the U.S. in particular, there's a huge private industry that gets contracts from the intelligence agencies and carries out most of their work, particularly their technical surveillance work. One part of that is provided by the telecommunications corporations, which includes the internet service providers as well. And they have, at least since the First World War, provided support technical services to the military and intelligence agencies, first starting off with the military people in the First World War, and then as the intelligence agencies were set up after the Second World War, they continued to provide that service. One of the most interesting things about the NSA situation is that they could not do this surveillance without the participation of these private companies, and the private companies are almost never held accountable for this. The question is, why not? In some cases, these companies are given legal exculpation documents to relieve them of responsibility for spying on their customers, which is what it is, because NSA does not have direct access to email, internet, and telephone. They always have to go through these private companies who run these facilities. I contrast that just briefly with other countries in which many of the communication systems are run by government. They're actually government operations, and so there's less of a conflict because the government just orders people to give access to the systems. In the U.S., these are all run by private companies, and so that they require legal authority. Some of them do require legal authority for NSA to have access to their systems. And by the way, Jim Risen in the New York Times talks about this, both in the articles and in his book, about just the surface of how this is done. But we can talk more about specifically how it's done.
Well, now, I'm just curious. I imagine that any sort of privacy policy that these businesses have with their customers would either make some sort of exception explicit in there, or they ignore the privacy policy and just allow the NSA to do this. I'm curious if that's any issue that's worth pursuing.
Well, it's a good point, because many of these, in fact, all these telecommunications companies are required by law to protect their customers' privacy. That is built into the legislation. And so for them to violate it, they would break the law unless they had legal coverage for doing so. Now, that's what is being done by these agencies now. And sometimes they will give this legal exculpation in writing. Sometimes they do it verbally in order to keep it secret. It's usually done through a very select number of people within these telecommunication organizations in order to keep it from leaking as to what's going on. Also, it's done through something called national security letters, in which these agencies issue letters to these corporations to comply, but are required to keep these letters secret. Mm-hmm. Perhaps Epic can talk more about how these letters work, but there have been several thousand of these issued recently in order to get access to communications and emails and telephone calls. So that, however, there have been instances reported in the past, both in books and in articles, that these companies sometimes will just volunteer to let these agencies in without any legal justification. They'll just do it for patriotic reasons. Others fight fiercely. For example, my own site's internet service provider, which is a Japanese company that bought a U.S. company, had to agree to allow the FBI access to its system in order for the sale to go through. We have publicized that on our site, and so we expect that our site is surveilled, along with thousands of other sites, through these communication companies that, because they're all heavily government-regulated, have to comply, or they don't get their license renewed. But I guess the main point we'd like to make is that without this technical help, this could not occur on the scale that it's occurring, so that these agencies are almost the whipping boys for what corporations are actually doing, which are betraying their customers. Now, and then just saying, well, we had to. But in fact, they don't have to. There's a Federal Register notice today in which one company is challenging an order from the FCC to allow surveillance to occur. So they do fight back.
Now,
there's not much attention given to this.
I'm assuming that you're talking about companies that are the broken off pieces of the former AT&T conglomerate. Are you talking cell phone companies too? Are we talking about Verizon and Sprint and everyone else that provides cell phones, or is this landline only?
No, it's all forms of telecommunications, whether it's a radio, telephone, internet, any form of telecommunication, and that's the term that's used to embrace them all. That they all are required to comply with government requests for access to data.
Okay, I want to share a little thing here from Wayne Madsen, who's been a guest periodically on the program and is actually probably familiar to both of you folks. He's a former NSA employee, and he is an investigative journalist based in the D.C. area. This is on his website yesterday, WayneMadsenReport.com. Quote, NSA spied on its own employees, other U.S. intelligence personnel, and their journalist and congressional contacts. WMR has learned that the NSA, on the orders of the Bush administration, eavesdropped on the private conversations and emails of its own employees, employees of other U.S. intelligence agencies, including the CIA and DIA, and their contacts in the media, Congress, and oversight agencies and offices. It continues on for about six or seven more paragraphs. This seems to... I don't know that it belittles the new revelation that the Times put out a few weeks ago, but it makes it almost seem like it's not exactly new news that this has been going on. Is that, do either of you feel like that's a safe statement, or there is something new about this?
I think that this is a news. This is something that the American public needs to know. It's just something that the privacy community and civil liberties community must have as a part of the policy discussion, the policy debate. What's suspected, but what's actually proven, the administration has admitted that it has engaged in this type of activity against U.S. citizens without any legality to support them doing so. I'm looking at the FISA statistics right now, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance at Court requests for surveillance requests from the government. They had 1,758. None of them in 2004, not one of them was denied by the court.
Mm-hmm.
So all applications that went to them for 2004, they accepted all of them.
Right,
so,
and you see that sort of same approval rate going back to 1978. I think... I forget what year it was, but there was kind of a momentous occasion within the past couple few years when, in fact, the first FISA request had been denied.
Right, that was in 2003. They had 1727. Four of those were denied.
Yeah, so that's 25 solid years of no refusal of a FISA court warrant request, and so that kind of makes me wonder. What is it the administration wanted that they thought the FISA court might not approve, given the approval rate?
And the fact that they could act under emergency basis without any approval and go within 72 hours to one of the 11 judges on the secret court and say, we had to do this. Now, you have to remember, no one can get a court transcript, no one can sit in on the proceedings, no mm-hmm. one can find out anything that's put before that court. So there's no reason why they didn't have a mechanism to actually do some these actions legally, which is very disturbing. The fact that they had a legal way to do this, but they chose not to.
We are running short on time, and I'd like to get just some last remarks from each of you. Why don't we just start with you, Lily Coney, from the Electronic Privacy Information Center. What are you folks doing regarding this issue, and what would you urge listeners to do to halt this type of intrusive surveillance of U.S. citizens by its own government?
Epic.org is a great place to go if you really want to get up to speed on a lot of that work that's been done over the last few years regarding the growth of the surveillance society within the United States. That's what I would suggest listeners do, is Epic.org. What Epic is continuing to do and has done is use our ability to get Freedom of Information Act requests and get documents from federal government agencies on their domestic activity. We're currently getting documents based on a court order from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. They are required to process a couple of thousand pages every couple of weeks and deliver appropriate documents to EPIC for review. As we find information we think would be of interest to the public and media and help enlighten people on what the government has been doing, we make that information available on our webpage.
and John Young from Cryptome.org. You guys don't do any advocacy in a traditional sense, but you folks have a tremendous online archive of national security related information. Can you elaborate a little bit on that and how you would urge people to use Cryptome.org?
Well, the first thing is I think that the reason that Bush did this is because of fear of the internet, because it has grown so fast, become so popular and so unruly that I think that all this recent surveillance had to do with the threat of the internet. Secondly, is that it's important that people demand greater privacy from their people who provide them internet services. You've got to back these folks up, because when we talk to them, they say, we don't have enough customers complaining about lack of privacy. We think you've got to buck them up to resist these intrusions and demand that your communications be held in private. The other thing is to use encryption for all your communication. But that's secondary to insisting that your provider provide privacy, or at least to publicize if they are being hounded by the government. They're right now off the hook.
All right. I appreciate both of you taking time out of your day to join us. We've been speaking here on the program with Lily Coney, Associate Director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, online at epic.org. Thank you to you for joining us.
Thank you.
And that just prior was John Young, the administrator of Cryptome.org, CRYPTOME.org. Thank you very much to you for being on the program as well.
You're very welcome.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye.
And that's going to do it here for us at People Rise Up. You got comments or questions? KBOO@riseup.net is the email address. I appreciate you listening to the program, and we'll be back next week with something else for you.